Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds Talk Movies. My name is Taylor. I'm going to be your host here today. I am once again, as always, joined by my two outstanding co-hosts. Spectacular co-hosts, I guess I can say, for this episode. Tristan and Drew. Tristan, let's start with you. How you doing?
Feeling pretty mid, Taylor. Just like this season. Psych! I'm spectacular, as you said, because it's a spectacular season of television. What a damn shame that this is, you know, the end.
Yeah, I kind of have some thoughts on that, because this is the end of one hell of a season. One hell of a series. Let's be real here.
I mean, hey, let's be nonfiction.
But we're also joined by the one and the only, Drew Garrison. Drew, how you doing?
I'm living on the edge, fighting crime, spinning web. Yes, I know I did this last time.
I say we're still, this sounds like a stressful life. If you're constantly living on the edge and fighting crime, it's been a web.
Yeah.
You know, with great power comes great responsibility.
I mean, hey, he's not wrong. He's not wrong.
Oh, man. So you saw the title. You heard our excitement. You clicked on this episode, too. You know the deal, all right? You get it. Today, we're going to be talking about Spectacular Spider-Man Season 2. A few weeks ago, we had a whole episode going over our thoughts on Season 1. If you didn't listen to it, here's a spoiler. We all absolutely loved it for its great writing, characters, voice cast, action, villains, and honestly, just pretty much everything else. Like, let's be real here.
This is probably one of the best Spider-Man shows to date.
I think you can probably remove probably from that sentence. And a lot of us here on this panel will agree. But overall, just I really think we were just nitpicking when we were trying to find some cons to talk about two weeks ago.
I was most definitely nitpicking. I have to find something, and this is hard. It's like you have to comb through it with a ultra magnifying glass to find anything you dislike.
So if you got the time, be sure to check that episode out. Anyway, we are moving on to Season 2 of Spectacular Spider-Man here today. Unfortunately, this would be the final season of Spectacular Spider-Man, as the series got caught up in a legal battle over rights with Sony and Marvel. This was around the same time Disney acquired Marvel. Still, we had a lot of interesting story beats heading into Season 2. Eddie Brock was in the wind after being defeated by Spider-Man in Season 1. Gwen kissed Peter, leaving his love life in a huge question mark. To be honest, when is his love life not a huge question mark? Harry was still recovering from his unintentional run as the Green Goblin, or so we thought. And Peter poured any chance of a normal life down the drain as he destroyed Dr. Connors' gene cleanser. With all that said, let's get into our retrospective. I talked about the cast and crew in our Season 1 episode, but real quick, here's a quick list of the cast and crew from the show, courtesy of IMDb. The series was directed by Victor Cook, Jennifer Coyle, Dave Bullock, Kevin Altieri, Michael Guggen, Troy Adomitis, and Dan Fawcett. I think it's Dan Fawcett, but the voice cast, here's some of the members of the voice cast. We had Josh Keaton as Peter Parker / Spider-Man, Kevin Michael Richardson as Tombstone, Lacey Chabert as Gwen Stacy, James Arnold Taylor as Harry Osborn, Steve Bloom as Green Goblin, Peter McNichol as Doc Ock, Clancy Brown as Rhino, and I believe he also voiced George Stacy.
He did.
Jeff Bennett as Shocker, John DiMaggio as Sandman and Hammerhead.
And the fact Robert that you England, can't tell that they're the same person when they both speak to each other a lot.
It's freaking wild, actually. But Robert Englund as the Vulture, Crispin Freeman as Electro, Darren Norris as J. Jonah Jameson, Vanessa Marshall as Mary Jane Watson, Alana Ubach as Liz Allen, Joshua Labar as Flash Thompson, D. Bradley Baker as Dr. Kurt Connors, Ben Diskin as Eddie Brock / Venom, and Deborah Strang as Aunt May.
They were not skipping on the voice acting talent.
Whew, we talked about it 2 weeks ago when we had our season one episode, but yeah, this is really is a star-studded voice cast. And we're going to talk about it here again today on this episode. Let's get into comic connections here. As for comic connections, Tristan and Drew pretty much nailed it in the season one episode. There, they both said, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, that Spectacular Spider-Man really just takes everything from the comics, and it's really difficult to nail down one specific comic run. They also said the show is one of the most faithful adaptations we've seen thus far. Now, here's my question here, guys. This doesn't have to be a long discussion, but has this changed at all after season two?
Not really.
No, not particularly.
In fact, it gets stronger because there are so many dropped characters, which you could tell that they were setting up for season three. Like,
I mean, they fucking teased Carnage.
Yeah, Cletus Kasady is like in the group with Doc Ock and Electro.
Looks nothing like Woody Harrelson, I'm sorry to say.
Wait, Woody Harrelson in Venom 1 or Venom 2? It's a very...
Either.
Okay. I just gotta be sure, though, because those are two very different...
portrayals.
Cletus Kasady's.
I mean, both are fantastic. Both are some of the best villains we've ever seen put to cinema. So, they rival Dane DeHaan in terms of...
Alright. You know, cut his mic. True. Please save this segment here. Anything else here? Comic connections. Anything we could really dive into before we get into our general thoughts?
Well, they did change a few things for this season. I think this is the first one that actually has some serious changes. Kraven never mutated in the comics once.
Yeah, didn't turn into a lion man.
Although...
Okay, I was going to ask that whenever we got into it, because I remember, like, he's a beloved character that multiple directors have wanted to cover, from Ryan Coogler to John Watts.
Well, he's getting his own movie, thanks to Sony.
It's the only Spider-Man movie I'm actually excited for, because Kraven can work without Spidey, although I think he works best with Spidey.
Now, okay, there's a conversation off-air about the rumors going around about the Madame Web movie that sound surprisingly awesome. But anyways, I was going to ask about the Kraven thing, because every adaptation I've seen from Kraven and everybody, the way they talk about him, it's more of the ultimate hunter kind of thing, to whereas in this show, like, they take that to a completely other level. Like, he actually turns into a lion. So it's very interesting to know that this is just something the show did.
Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of Kraven. Like, I have searched for Kraven's Last Hunt in paperback or single issues, if I can find them. They're really hard to find because apparently it was so dark, Marvel doesn't really like posting it.
What, the single issues or the trade paperback? Because I got the trade paperback, no problem.
Single issues.
Oh, I was about to say.
Yeah, I found the trade paperback. Kraven mutating has always been something, well, with the comic community, anytime they want him to, like, mutate into an animal, it's a whole thing where it's like a back and forth between the comics community, as far as I've seen, because technically, while he has never mutated, he's been augmented to have the powers of certain animals when Calypso is involved. And other times it's been questionable because they go back and forth on whether it's magic or if it's science or if it's like something in between or whatever. So it's never really been patted down. And that's not what really Kraven is known for. He's known for being, like, the hunter who eventually did Kraven's Last Hunt, came back, and only Spider-Man can kill him. One of the characters notorious for saving killing until, like, the very last moment. You have to really push Spider-Man to make him, like, have to kill you.
Interesting.
They also changed Silver Sable. She's not Silvermane's daughter in the comics.
Okay, that's another thing I think we were going to get into later on, because that's what I thought was the comic backstory. As a non-comic viewer, I was like,
she's from new. Drew, isn't she just from Simicaria? Like, she has no connection to Silvermane.
Yeah, well, technically, like, it was a small little thing where it was possible that Silvermane was her dad and everything. And then eventually it's revealed, no, he wasn't. It's just a coincidence in their names and stuff. But there is a little bit of comic precedence there, but it's like, it's so light and it's never gone anywhere, never done anything with. So, and again, they eventually revealed, oh, he's not, so never really found fault with it. Plus, honestly, just having her being a part of the gang wars and everything was fine by me, because she's really awesome in Spectacular Spider-Man. It's like, this is probably her best viewing, because in the video games, I kind of thought she was kind of like dumb, if I'm being honest. Like, cool damn acrobatics, but
damn, we got a hater on Silver Sablanova.
Look, I would give her like her due diligence and credit and everything, if it wasn't for the fact that they have to nerf Spidey every time she appears. Like, oh, she sets traps. His spider sense doesn't go off to avoid said traps, and he's easily captured by her when he just went through a ton of her men with extra gear.
So it's interesting to know that some things are just different for this show compared to the comics. But let's get into our general thoughts. At the time of this recording, this show is available on Netflix in the United States, but it isn't divided into seasons. So with that in mind, here are the episode titles for Season 2 that we'll be covering today. It's a 13-episode season, which has the following episodes. Blueprints, Destructive Testing, Reinforcement, Sheer Strength, First Steps, Growing Pains, Identity Crisis, Accomplices, Probable Cause, Gangland, Subtext, Opening Night, and the series finale, Final Curtain. Now we got that out of the way. Let's get into it.
Can I do my little trivia beforehand?
Go ahead.
Yeah, so the episode titles have this little trivia thing that I like to bring up. The first four episodes are named after notions from engineering. After that, the next three are in human development. The following three are in criminology, and the final three are in drama. And ironically, technically, they all do center around the plots for those episodes. First four are more around technology than anything else, at least for like the supervillain plans and what they're doing and everything. Next three are definitely in human development. I mean, First Steps literally shows Sandman's redemption and Flash's starting character arc, so that's all there too. Basically, every time they change up where their episode themes are, it's like they'll change the titles to fit what it's about and everything. So it's really cool. They did their research.
And they did this in Season 1 as well, to where it was different subjects and what she would say in high school. So that was pretty cool, how they're theming their titles around these episodes for arcs, kind of. But, Tristan, what are your general thoughts on Spectacular Spider-Man Season 2?
See, I mean, it's a banger. Like, it's just as good, if not better, than the first season. But I always get confused when talking about the delineation, such a hard word, between the two seasons, because I remember when it was coming out, like, I feel like I watched it all at once. Although I will say, this experience watching it was much better than the first time I watched it when it was all coming out, because for whatever reason, when I had recorded the final episode of the entire series, this is my first time watching it since, you know, I had originally TiVo'd it. But when I TiVo'd it, for some reason, I don't know if it was an issue with the way it aired on Disney XD or whatever, but like the sound was all off. So for like, well, at least all the dialogue's off. So for like the maybe half of the episode, just there was all the music and the explosions and the sound effects and everything, but there was no dialogue at all, or it was like delayed by like three scenes. So let me tell you, watching it now, boy, it really wraps up the season nicely. There's a lot of plot threads that I got clarified.
When you understand what's going on,
yeah, really, and I'm like, more... oh, this is cool. This is great. Yeah, love this. But no, overall, I'd say this was a banger of a season, and God, it just makes me wish we got a season three.
According to IMDb here, Nature versus Nurture was the end of season one, and that aired on June 14th, 2008. Season two, Blueprints, aired on January 11th, 2009. So there was a bit of a time gap there.
Yeah, they marketed it as two different seasons, I remember, because I was hooked on this show. It was premiering on JetX and everything. And I was like, oh yeah, I can't wait. And then when I found out after 13 episodes, that was a whole season. It's like, I had a little kid fit and be like, no, a season's 26 episodes. Where are the other 13? I need more of this show.
Like, I know it's a cartoon, but you guys remember when shows used to have 20-something episodes and it was normal?
What a time.
What a time.
what a time.
Usually, I'm so glad that we've moved on to a 10-episode, 12-episode per season max, because it leaves for a lot less filler and a lot better seasons. But in the case of this show specifically, man, I wish we had more. Especially knowing we only had 2 seasons. Drew, we love season 1. Give us your general thoughts, and did this surpass season 1 for you?
I think it does surpass season 1 for me, but much like other stuff where it's like, this season's better than this season. It's season 2 is great because it builds off of what we got in season 1. So it's like I just love this stuff as a whole, so I won't say, like, I love season 2 more than season 1, because they both do it so epically, so perfectly. I just love this show. But my favorite episodes do mostly come from season 2. Like, the Sandman episode is one of my favorite, and made me really, really appreciate Spider-Man 3 a lot more. Seeing Sandman's redemption here.
All right. Let's not talk crazy.
Oh, so now you want to not talk crazy. But earlier, you're talking about Dane DeHaan and...
Yeah, I'm talking about cinematic master Dane DeHaan. What's crazy about that?
Look, we're a big Dane DeHaan show.
Big Dane
we
DeHaan.
We really appreciate Dane DeHaan.
Welcome to the new segment, Digging the DeHaan, where we talk about how much we dig Dane DeHaan. I'm your host, Tristan Benz. Joining me are my co-hosts, Taylor and Drew. How are you guys feeling about Dane DeHaan today?
Have you seen him in a movie other than Amazing Spider-Man 2?
So I'm in Chronicle. Okay. Saw him in the trailers for Valerian. seen him in bits and pieces of... A Place Beyond the Pines, where I find it really hard to believe he's Ryan Gosling and Eva Mendes' son, but, you know, he's an actor, and he can take on any role. I feel like I've seen him in something else. Hold on. All right, guys, we're going to wrap up Digging the Dane DeHaan. I'll come back with some research on whether or not I've seen Dane DeHaan in other roles other than Spider-Man. But happy to have you guys here on this inaugural episode, and back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Okay, so I'm glad you did that. Drew, please continue, because I don't even know where you're at. Just
okay,
take it away.
So as I was saying, like, season 2 is probably has a lot of my favorite episodes of Spectacular Spider-Man, just because it does expand on everything that season 1 set up. So all the appreciation I have from season 1 not only is built upon here, it's enhanced. And I do admit, when I was a kid, not gonna completely spoil it, but I did expect a certain someone to still be the big bad of this season. So,
well, you can kind of spoil it. We're into this general thoughts. Like, there's gonna be spoilers.
Okay, I did not expect Norman Osborn to be the Green Goblin in season 2. I did expect Harry to continue to be the Green Goblin in season 2, and was honestly hoping for it, because I did like the fact that Norman was just a creepy mentor to Peter, and maybe pushing him into more of the dark side. So, you know.
We'll get into that Green Goblin arc, but I'm kind of with you. I thought it was Harry, and it was going to be Norman, but it was going to be Norman just using, like, oh, it must be Harry again. I had no idea that they had planned out this big twist the entire time, and we'll get into it, but I'm with you. I thought it was definitely going to be Harry, at least at first.
Yeah.
As for me, I thought this was a great season. I do think season 1 was a little better, but I think that's because I'm one of those people who prefers Venom over Green Goblin as the main antagonist of Spider-Man.
Totally understandable. Both have things to offer.
Yeah, both have things to offer. Both have that hatred of Spider-Man, but it's just a little different, I think. And I just think that Venom-Spider-Man dynamic is so great. So when we get to the Green Goblin arc at the end of Season 2, it's awesome, and I love the way they handle it. But it doesn't fully hit the height that Season 1 hit with the Venom arc to me. Especially since Season 2 kind of goes like, here's the Green Goblin. Okay, he's dead now. Show's over.
Or is he?
Or is he? And it's like, what? No. Show me more. What do you mean the show's over? That's literally what I said out loud at 2 o'clock in the morning when I was watching the finale. No, show me more. What do you mean this is over now? But overall, I thought this was an awesome season. I love a lot of stuff here that I can't wait to get into. So let's just go ahead and get into it. Let's real quick talk about our voice cast again, because we had nothing but praise in our Season 1 episode, and I think that's going to continue here. Any standout performances this season to you? Drew, let's start with you this time.
I don't want to get into the big ones yet, so I'm going to talk about some of the villains because they and the side characters. So, Kraven, love his voice. I cannot say if it is Russian or African accented at all. Those are not accents that I am totally familiar with, besides the stereotype ones, like Digimon Hansuo, who everyone tries to do his accent when they do African. But I do love his voice, and it's really good, and it fits the character so, so well. So that's one standout for me.
Eric Fesbitt, by the way, voices Kraven the Hunter in this series.
Yeah, Rand also stood out to me just because I love how his, you can tell, like, he's just putting up with Stacy, his girlfriend now. So it's like, I actually paid a little bit more attention to Rand, and I was like, yes, Rand, you were like one of the few good guys on the football team. It's like, just dump her, realize you can do better. Joshua Labar as Flash Thompson, also doing really well. I don't know how he made Flash's voice crack whenever he went louder, but that was pretty cool. It's like, it definitely like makes him feel like he could do a teen voice. Clancy Brown killing it as George Stacy, and Alan Ratchins as Norman. Oh, if I have to give the award for who does the best voice this season, he just steals the show. And that's also with returning Kevin Michael Richardson as Tombstone. Oh, and let's not forget Lacey Chabert. Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I remember her from her many voice roles in the graphic audio novelizations of some of my favorite DC Comics novels.
Wow.
So,
Lacey Chabert as Gwen Stacy. She kills it as Gwen. She's honestly like the voice I hear whenever I read Gwen Stacy in the comics now. Oh, so many definitive voice roles for me from this series, and all of them knock it out of the park. Love it.
Tristan, by the way, real quick, we talked about the amazing voice cast we have here of legendary voice actors. You talked about Rand Robertson earlier, Drew. You know who voices Rand Robertson?
Phil Lamar. He voices Rand Robertson. I think I mentioned that earlier too. The legendary Phil Lamar.
Phil Lamar would even make our list of like the main characters because he's voicing Rand Robertson. But Phil Lamar is one of the most well-known voice actors out there. I figured
I'd say, what cartoon hasn't he had a voice?
That's what I'm saying. He's literally everywhere at this point. He's probably the Samuel L. Jackson of voice acting. I feel pretty confident in saying that.
I would sign off on that.
Yeah.
Tristan, what's your thought? Who are your standouts this season?
Like Drew, big Kraven fan, both in the comics and in the show, so I did really enjoy Kraven's voice. I fucking love Doc Ock's voice, man. Like, I like how he sounds just so, like, he just sounds conniving. You know what I mean? Like, even when he's pretending to be all meek, it's like, oh, it's me, you know, I'm Otto Octavius. But then I will destroy the Spider-Man.
Okay, quick question. Is he pretending or is it the arms? Because when he's without the arms, he is meat. But when he has
he's pretending. He was the master planner. Like, he set all that up. Because didn't he say that to Electro? When Electro's like, oh, Doc, why were you all being a baby? And he's like, yeah, because I'm the master planner, stupid.
Like, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, it was all a part of his act. I'm trying to think. J. Jonah Jameson still cracks me the hell up. And we get more like of J. Jonah Jameson being an actual, like, having a role in a few more episodes in this. And I have to totally co-sign what Drew says about the voice of Norman Osborn, because it's like, man, what a schemey, cold, manipulating fuck. And he just pulls off that voice so well. But I mean, the main standout for me is still, you know, it's going to be Josh Keaton as Peter Parker, you know. Now, Josh Keaton as Peter Parker isn't necessarily the voice that I hear in my head when I read Spider-Man, if only because Josh Keaton is typically the voice I hear when I'm reading Cyclops, and I don't like to use the same voice in my head, because then what if Spider-Man's hanging out with the Avengers, or the X-Men? I mean, then I get confused. But he's damn good as Peter Parker. There's no denying that. He is the spectacular Spider-Man. Oh, and I gotta give a shout out to Mysterio's voice, who's fucking funny.
Oh yeah, I love Mysterio. Although, I am gonna call him a little shit, because you made Stan Lee have to get on his knees. Don't like that.
For me, yeah, I'm right there with you, Tristan. I think Josh Keaton really cemented himself this season as one of the best Spider-Man voice actors I've heard. He has these performances. We saw it with the Venom arc where he was able to get like dark and edgy enough without feeling like too over the top. And I think you see more of that here in his conflicted emotions, how he's feeling with his love life, how he feels at the end, especially with Norman. There's like a switch that you see Spider-Man go through when he realizes that Norman's the Green Goblin, and it just pisses him off. And I just thought Josh Keaton really nailed it the entire season. His comedic timing is really good. The dialogue was great, which really helps, by the way. But I think having that delivery and the comedic timing of Josh Keaton there as Spider-Man, it really helps elevate the comedy of the character. But overall, he is still the standout to me. I do agree also about Norman Osborn, Alan Rakins as the character. I thought he delivered that cold performance very well. And also, I really just enjoy Steve Bloom as Green Goblin. There's something about how he's just so over the top about it.
He's another person where it's like, we got to give him more credit for everything.
Yeah. Steve Bloom is like, I'm glad they got two different voices for the Goblin and for Norman. Really does also keep the secrecy, but also it's just, ooh, you allow them both to like give out the best they can about it, to where Green Goblin is over the top and he can have those witty banter moments where you just can't see that with Norman. His voice just wouldn't allow it.
Lacey Chabert.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, Lacey Chabert is still amazing as Gwen Stacy. And also, my last standout here, gotta give Ben Diskin some credit here as Eddie Brock and Venom. He brought a level of desperation, I think, to the character that I really like to see in Identity Crisis. It just has that little bit more depth to the character. I think that's what makes it a little better than Green Goblin for me in this adaptation.
And I think part of that is because it is the one, like, I mean, the dichotomy between the two voice actors for Green Goblin is fantastic, but I do think part of what you're talking about with that consistency with Eddie Brock and Venom is because it is that one voice actor, you know, it's that one performance.
Yeah, I could see that. And by the way, you talked about Quentin Beck. Xander Berkeley voices Quentin Beck in this show. Who's been in a lot of movies. I don't think I've seen him in many animation projects before. He's been in Terminator 2, Air Force 1. Forgot the character. He played a character in 24 that was pretty good in the early seasons.
Air Force 1 is such a good movie. When are we going to talk Air Force 1? I got to put that on the wheel at some point.
Oh, that, Dude, I'm down for that. Air Force One.
Bro, I fucking love Air Force One. Drew, you seen Air Force One?
I have not.
You not see? Oh, get off my plane.
See, these 80s and 90s action movies, there's a level of cheese to them.
There's a level of cheese that you gotta respect.
They're just part of the time. Like, if it was made in 2022, I don't think people would enjoy it as much.
There was something else I wanted to bring up. Oh, apparently in interviews, it was, they revealed that, Eddie was going to be in the planned season 3, and Peter was going to try and bring him back to the light. They never said if he succeeded or not, but I would have loved to see Pete and Eddie, like, just talking or doing anything besides, like, fighting to, like, see where their relationship is at the current day. It's like, God, I wish season 3 came about, because apparently they had tons of plans for up to a season 6, apparently.
And some animated movies.
Yeah.
So bring that up, Drew, whenever we get to the Venom storyline. Because I have a theory on how I thought it was going to go. But I'm going to wait to talk about it. Let's go ahead and start our official discussion here. And I kind of want to start with Venom, though, a little bit. Because I want to talk about just Peter's trauma a little bit.
Wait, I'm sorry. So, Taylor, you want to talk about Venom?
Well, not Venom specifically. I want to talk about Peter and his trauma after facing off against...
Also, his trauma facing off against Venom!
There you go. I really like this. I thought this was a great way to show that that encounter mattered to Peter. And it really showed that friendship and how broken it was. And it wasn't just a, well, I beat the bad guy and I'm going to move on now. It showed the lingering effects. And we do see later on that it was Eddie toying with Peter, because he is the Reverse Flash to Peter's Barry Allen. And I fucking love him for it. But it also shows just...
It was me, Peter.
Peter's just, he can't get it out of his mind that one of his best friends turned to the dark side. And I loved it. What did you guys think of this whole arc throughout the season?
I like what you say about almost him being like Peter's Reverse Flash. Because this does really, like, man, it just adds to the argument of Venom being number one hater. Like, this man is just a menace, and not even like, oh, Spider-Man, threat or menace. I mean, just man is just such a menace. Like, somebody put him, not put him down, but put him away. Like, stop this man, please. He's endangering Aunt May. We can't be having all this, like, spilling Peter's identity. Like, come on, bro. Like, chill, Eddie.
Apparently, the symbiote just put on those black Air Force Ones.
Oh, my God. Boy, did it. And the red polo is like, all right, this is, he's like, we got a problem here. We got a problem. Venom just looks at Peter Parker. What you trying to get into? It's like, all right, we don't... Venom, please stop. Please chill, you know? But, man, I mean, God, it's so good. I'm trying to think. Is this better than Tom Hardy's Venom, you know? I think that's a...
It's different for sure, because Tom Hardy's Venom, they go for a more outlandish and more anti-hero vibe to where this is.
I mean, just... I think it's clearly it's the superior vibe, you know. It's just the fans, the markets
Spider-Man?
Have spoken. No, Tom Hardy's
I gotta disagree, but that's just personal preference again.
Well, Taylor, disagree or not, the market, the almighty dollar has agreed.
But this adaptation here, I'm really glad I watched the show just to see, like, what Eddie could be if he was written well.
I really do like this Venom. One of my few nitpicks is that Eddie was known at Pete's high school, and like the fact that no one just can see him when Peter's like, "Hey, has anyone seen Eddie?" and it's like no one seems to recognize him. Kind of weird. Like, I don't think that could happen. Also, him showing up and, like, having to have that alarm go off immediately so he can hide and stuff. It's like, okay, you know, a lot of it was up to chance, Eddie. This would not have worked unless New York just happened to keep having these crimes right where you guys were.
And that's such a Spider-Man thing, though. Like, I feel like more so than other, like, comic book characters or superheroes, Peter is the one who kind of just wanders into crime. Just like, hey, supervillain just happens to be robbing a bank. It's like, what? Superman's on patrol. Well, guess what? If something happens on the other side of the city, He hears it. Batman, they shine a light in the sky. The X-Men, oh, wow, what, Magneto's attacking? We gotta go there, you know.
Daredevil hears it, too.
Daredevil hears it, too. But, like, Spider-Man just like, la-di-da-da-da. I'm either he's swinging around on patrol, or it's, hey, you know, I'm going on assignment for the Daily Bugle. Oh, my God, the Rhino's robbing a bank. It just happens to be right next to me. It's like, all right, come on. Like, it's great. Peter, it's fantastic. Luck. Yeah, it's that Parker luck.
Yeah, although I do think it was explained by Madame Web and expanded upon in Spider-Verse that the spider sense will subtly nod Peter closer to crime because that's what he has chosen to do with his powers. So that's the in-comic reason, and again, it's never fully explained, but It is kind of weird. But again, it's a small little nitpick. And again, I'm pretty sure Eddie had other ways of getting away and, like, hiding from Pete if he needed to, so. But Peter
just didn't have trauma this season. He also had a love triangle. So, I gotta admit, I was down with the whole, everything they were doing with this whole love triangle around the middle of the season. To the end, I thought it was really good. It took me a while to get into it. The first few episodes of this season, I think, is what really just bogs it down, because it really hits you over the head with Peter's a fucking moron. He has like three girls after him, and he's just like, I don't know what the hell is going on. And it's just one of those things that's just like, Peter, come on, man, you gotta just decide at some point. And they just kind of drug it along. Once they committed to the Liz-Peter relationship and they went along with that, I think it got a lot better. But before that, I gotta admit, I really wasn't into it. What'd you guys think of this?
I was into it because, for one thing, Peter is just trying to talk to Gwen, and he's a dork. It's like he sputters on his words. It's one of the first things we see about him when he's in his high school setting. So it's like, yeah, I can understand it. Now that the relationship between him and Gwen is changing, it's like he doesn't know what to say. He's stuttering on his words. It's like, it's fine.
Tristan, any thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm just waiting for Gwen to get tossed off a building so Peter can get with Mary Jane. And Liz can go kick her. That's about where I'm at. I prefer Peter with Mary Jane. I mean, that's who I am. You know, I'm a MJ and Peter kind of guy. Nothing against Gwen. I think she's a decent character, you know, nice girl. I wish she didn't have to get tossed off the building. If they could have it where they just break up or something, or like she gets tossed off the building but she survives, but she's like, it's too dangerous for us to be together, and she just, you know, heads off to Europe or something.
Tristan likes Dane DeHaan so much. Goblin killed Gwen Stacy.
Hey,
Spider-Man.
Hey,
and apparently he just hates Gwen Stacy.
Apparently. I don't hate Gwen Stacy. I just would rather her not be around. You know, whatever route gets me to that end goal, then hey, you know, that's a conversation that we could have. Again, great, great gal, you know, important role in Peter's life. Mary Jane is better, at least in the comics. The movies, yeah, Emma Stone's, you know, fucking great. I'm not gonna, her chemistry with Andrew Garfield is just, it's palpable, and we've established that MJ, in at least in the Raimi movies, not necessarily the best human being. So, yeah. You know, Gwen, great in you know, in the cinemas, but just overall, I'm an MJ guy. So it's... I mean,
so this
it's a
kind
classic
of, this whole
Parker
season,
love triangle. So,
yeah,
you know,
I was about to say, this whole love triangle, it really just did nothing for you. You're just like, whatever.
No, I mean, it's like, okay, Peter's doing high school drama love triangle stuff as Spider-Man is wont to do. Great. Call me when he grows up and he's with the woman he's supposed to be with.
See, I'm one of those people who's like, I like both Gwen and Mary Jane. Both of them bring different things to the table, but I do want one where we're not acting like Mary Jane and Peter are, like, destined to be together, because it's this whole thing where it's a forced and a lot of expended content to the point where Peter is actually having great chemistry with someone else, and Mary Jane is having her own stuff, and it feels like they're crashing them together in order to make it work. It's not like they're... and it's like, it really sours my experience with Mary Jane's extended universe when it feels like, oh, they can have separate lives for a change and be good friends and everything, and then wait a minute, these two, you're gonna try and push these two together now, but it doesn't work. It's like, you've made them great best friends and they both have great chemistry with other people. It's like, oh, we're just doing this now. I get really tired of the destined Mary Jane is the one true love of Peter, everything, especially when it's forced. So there are times where I'm just like, just keep it Gwen, or just keep it whatever girl you've got Peter getting with. And most of the time it is Gwen, because Gwen is the first real true love interest of Peter. So,
nah, they're off a building.
Well, Jesus Christ. Damn it.
No. I don't condone the fridging of female characters. I meant that in the metaphorical
sense. Unless it's Gwen Stacy.
Throw her out of my... I mean, to be fair, until she came back as Spider-Gwen, what was her claim to fame? What was she bringing to the table? She got yeeted off a building.
True.
She got yeeted. What was the big Gwen storyline? She got yeeted off a building. Oh, and then guess what? Hey, maybe she secretly had kids with Norman Osborn.
Past.
They retconned it, thankfully. Thankfully.
We do not talk about that storyline. No.
They retconned it, but I'm just saying, up until the point that everyone started caring about Gwen, that's all she had. They didn't bring her back as Spider-Gwen until people started liking Emma Stone. So I'm just saying, Mary Jane's got a bit more meat on the bone in terms of character growth and shit. That's all. That's the point I'm making.
Okay, for anyone who's watching and does go to the comics, don't read that storyline. Don't read it.
Read the storyline.
It's creepy. Don't read it.
It's creepy, but you should read it. Just so you can judge it.
I think, though, like, the reason we're really onto this, and I think there's something about the whole Spider-Man romance stories and all that that's just part of the character, period. So sometimes I think we're going into superhero movies and they're like, hey, here's the love story for the hero, and you're like, I don't care. I think with Spider-Man it's a little different, though, because it's part of that struggle for him to have that normal life, and it really fits. So I don't mind a love triangle in this setting. For example, the one that just keeps popping up to me of like a love triangle I just didn't really like in cinema or television show, I don't know why this is the first one that popped up, but Lost, with Kate, Jack, and Sawyer, and it just, then they added Juliet in there, and it became so complicated.
Came a love square. Weird.
Yeah, and just, I didn't care for it. With Spider-Man, I think it's one of those things that it might be a nostalgia for me, but at the same time, I do enjoy it for the most part. It just took a little while for me to get into it. But let's get away from Peter's trauma and his love life. They kind of intersect. We'll get back to his love life, though, because, you know, something happens at the end of the season. It kind of sucks for Peter, but it is what it is. Let's talk about some villains here, because we have some new antagonists this season. And the season kicks off with Blueprints, which is the origin for Mysterio. We saw Quentin Beck in season one, but we didn't see him as Mysterio until the season two premiere. I really love this introduction. It was not the mindfuckery Mysterio that I loved from the Far From Home and a little bit in the animated series, I want to say the 90s animated series, but it still worked because he was just such an annoying motherfucking character. He had those little bats that was talking shit to Spider-Man the whole time. I thought that was great. Just overall, I love this character for how different he was from other adaptations. What'd you guys think?
Well, like I said, he was one of my standout voice performances of the season. I think the episode itself is really good, but just the way he manages to capture the ego of Mysterio, I think Xander Berkeley just nails it. Like, because he's constantly going like, ooh, aha, Spider-Man, like, you're no match for the true master of the mystic arts. And he's like, bro, like, this is special effects. Fucking stop. Like, get the fuck out of here, you nerd. So I really like this. I would put this in one of my, I'd say top four episodes for me this season would be Blueprint, just for how ridiculous I find Mysterio.
And one of the reasons I think it works so much is what we were talking about earlier with Peter's trauma with Venom and stuff like that, and where he was coming out of season one, and he has three love interests, basically. Really two, but overall with Mary Jane being a love interest, usually in the comics, you kind of figure that's eventually going to become a thing. Two new villains, that's Mysterio and the Tinkerer. A potential new big bad, which was the Master Planner. He had an aunt who just had a heart attack. A former best friend who is still on the run. Another friend who's recuperating from being a supervillain. He had a lot of stuff going on heading into the season premiere. So having this like really annoying illusionist come up and just annoy him the entire episode was fantastic. Drew, what do you have to say about Mysterio here?
Honestly, I really do like this version of Mysterio. Again, do call him a little shit for making Stan go on his knees in the Stan Lee cameo. But besides that, I do like that he is just this actor who loves the part he plays and refuses to let anyone else be Mysterio. It's like his character flaw, but also makes him very interesting.
He reminds me a little bit of Clayface from the Harley Quinn show.
Yeah. A bit, yeah.
And that's not a complaint. That's a huge compliment, I gotta say.
Yeah, he's not as crazy as that, but it's like Harley Quinn show does delve into more crazy sides of the Batman villains. But I do like this Mysterio and everything. And when I saw in the MCU that they were using the green smoke and everything, and I was like, oh yeah, that's Spectacular Spider-Man style Mysterio. So I was really excited. It's like, he's one of my favorite villains, especially since like he's trying to stay in character the entire time he plays Mysterio and everything, and it's just I just love it.
Well, we'd see Mysterio later on. We'll have some stuff to talk about with him, but we gotta get into Kraven's Hunt, which is destructive testing. Man, this is one of my favorite episodes of the entire season. It was just everything I wanted from Kraven. I still don't know how I feel about him getting turned into a lion, but at the same time, it was one of those things that's like, man, that is different. It makes the character a little unique compared to different adaptations, and I don't hate it. But unfortunately, we just don't get enough of them past this point, other than the episode we're going to talk about later. What did you guys think of his introduction?
I love this episode. This is actually, when I was younger, one of my favorite episodes. It's not anymore, because they're just, I'm into writing more, so the writing has affected me more. But I really like this version of Kraven. Loved when he turned into the Lion Man, because of how dangerous he was right afterwards. And I remember that was one of the reasons I liked him, because I was like, dang, this guy is literally like thrashing Spidey and everything. And it's only because Spidey actually still uses his weapons, which Kraven stopped using, that he's able to get the one up on him by using his web shooters. So it was really cool to me. Also, really do like his personality in this one. It's a bit different. Not like totally different. It's a bit different though than his other different Kravens throughout his adaptations and even his original comics counterpart. I do question, it's like, okay, were you gonna kill Spidey? Is that your whole thing?
It feels as if he kind of lost his honor, the honor side of the character that a lot of people kind of think the character has in the other adaptations he's had.
Yeah, it's like he had it at the start of it, because it's like he wants to save the rhino, doesn't want to put it down and everything. Of course, there's also, he likes the thrill of the hunt, so that's a part of his character too. My question though is the fact that they leave it a little loose on whether he was going to kill Spidey after capturing him, because that is the big question I had. And apparently that is something they've also brought up in interviews on what they would have done with some of the villains later on. It's like they don't really go in depth. They always just lay down the question. It's like, what would have Kraven done if he had got Spidey the first time? And it's like, I get so mad at you guys, because it's not like we're ever going to get an answer, guys.
I mean, I thought he was going to kill him. Like, he was shooting at him with a bow and arrow. So, they were pointy arrows. And,
yeah.
You know, he threw knives at him and threw a sword, or not sword, tried to stab him with a spear. So, I thought it was pretty clear that Kraven was out for blood.
Yeah, he threw a knife at him, too, in spite he caught it. So, yeah, he probably was, but, the writers make it ambiguous and everything, so it's like, I have no idea what their intentions were. But
see, that's the part of it to me that I actually really enjoy, is the fact that I love how it seems like when he gets transformed, he loses the human side of him a little bit. That would be the, he has a little bit of honor to him that would respect Spider-Man. And that, like, respect of the hunt. He loses that once he becomes his full transformation. But for me, it goes back to what I was saying in season one. I think the design just threw me off. And I was like, I don't know if I like that. But, Tristan, here's my question to you. How do you feel about his characterization from the jump? Because I felt like in the first 10-ish minutes, they set his character up perfectly.
Oh, I agree. I was like, okay, well, dope. This is Kraven the Hunter. Like, he's nailing it. He's not down with poachers, but he still is, like, a big fan of you know, nature, which has always been such a weird oxymoron. Because, well, not always. It's more of a recent development as they've tried to make him a more popular character since his resurrection, where it's like, he does have that code of honor, so it's like, yeah, he's a hunter, but, like, he's also one with nature. Like, they almost give him a Tarzan sort of vibe, you know?
Is it really an oxymoron, though? Because it's not as though survival of the fittest isn't nature's rules.
Yeah, true, but then, you know, wouldn't, like, survival of the fittest be like, okay, well, the beast is mad, like, if you can put it down, put it down, you know?
Yeah, true.
Either way, like, I thought, for the most part, this struck a pretty solid balance between the two. And I also just thought it was really funny when he's walking around New York City with a lion on a leash.
Where's that news story, Jonah?
one of the things I also loved about this episode, I want to get your guys' thoughts on it. I thought the action scenes with Kraven and Spider-Man, especially their first encounter, was one of the best in the entire series.
I would agree. I would sign off on that.
Yeah. There's something about that, Spider-Man is being hunted down. And I always love when Spider-Man's on his back foot. It's one of the reasons why I love Doc Ock as a villain as much as I do. It's because he has the extra arms. Spider-Man is automatically on the back foot in any kind of encounter. So just seeing him having to react to Kraven and try to formulate a plan on how to beat him and everything, I thought was really good. Which we'll get into more action scenes later on, especially, but I thought it was worth shouting out here. Anything else about Kraven in this episode you guys will talk about?
I like Gyokin. I wish we had more of the lion. He disappears after this, and I'm sad.
Fuck, I forgot he had a lion.
We just talked about how
apparently so did he.
By the way, let's just go ahead and talk about him, I guess, here. Let's talk about Miles Warren here. So, you guys warned me about old Miles Warren.
Yeah, fucking weirdo.
He seemed like a character we were going to delve into in season 3. We just didn't really get. How did you guys feel about the character? I felt like I didn't really have an attachment.
That was kind of the point of season 2. It's like season 2 is definitely going to be more of his setup. And apparently, like, he, again, if we had gotten more seasons, he was going to be a focus of one of the seasons. But, yeah, the point being was that you weren't supposed to really attach to this character. You were always going to supposed to have him in the back of your head. And considering that he only does, like, a few illegal things and all he wants is Kurt's research so he can finish his stuff, it's like, his setup is really nice. I do not think, however, he is a standout, and again, lost setup, but he's not a standout of this season. Do like
not enough green fur.
Huh?
So not enough green fur on him.
yeah,
Tristan, not enough. Anything about Miles Warren?
I mean, my main thing is not enough green fur. Like, yeah, this whole season was just set up for him, So had the show continued, I would have liked to have seen where he went as the Jackal. But, you know, in this role, he served his purpose. He moved some pieces. He did a little Sinister Science-y shit. And, he was fine.
So the end of Kraven's episode, Kraven escapes, Calypso saves him, and Kraven gets a call from the Master Planner for a team-up of sorts, which I immediately was like, oh, fuck yeah, we're getting another Sinister Six. I'm down for this. And we sure did in the episode titled Reinforcement. I'm going to get this out of the way first. We talked about Cletus Kasady earlier. Let's go ahead and get this cameo out of the way. So there's, whenever Electro and Doc Ock are in a therapy session, there is a certain red-haired individual who apparently had just got done talking, and the doctor said, "That's encouraging news, Cletus." And that's all we hear from the character the entire rest of the season. Would you guys have wanted to see Cletus Kasady in the future?
Honestly, for this show, unless it got darker with the seasons, not really. Cletus is a very hardcore style character, and he does not work without that heavy R rating, so...
Well, and that's why I would have wanted to see him, because I want to see how far the show would have pushed it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Tristan. I think they would have... Seeing how they did with the Venom arc, which I'll have more to say about Venom and Carnage when we get to Venom, but I thought it would have been interesting to see how they handled it, because I thought they handled Venom very well without getting overly too dark, while still being a more of a mature story than what I was expecting, you know? So I'm curious to see how they would have handled a Cletus Kasady. But here's our lineup here for the Sinister Six. We had Kraven, Electro, Vulture, Sandman, Rhino, and Mysterio, with Doc Ock getting left behind. He didn't want to be part of the team. I wonder why. But we also had a support.
Invite back Shocker.
Yeah, he didn't invite back Shocker's in this season too. I forgot to put him in notes. And the Enforcers. But here's the thing though. We also had some support from the Sinister Six with the Tinkerer and the Master Planner, who was planning it all out. What'd you guys think of the Sinister Six lineup here? Not the episode, just the lineup.
It's a solid lineup.
It's good shit. I also love that with the pair offs, they're very specific. Electro and Vulture are part of the original six, already have experience working together. Then we have Sandman and Rhino, who both have been working together before they got powers. Now they got powers, and they even bring it up. It's nice to see the work together, but O'Hearn's like stubbornness always kind of messes it up.
And they're both an OG Sinister Six too.
Yeah, but it's like they didn't get to have their moments talking with each other beforehand, and mostly it's like the Sinister Six is so focused on taking down Spidey that they kind of don't get their chances to speak and everything, especially since their whole goal is actually not to take down Spider-Man but distract him. So that's pretty cool. That was pretty cool too. Kraven and Mysterio. If you had told me before that they worked together, even on the Sinister Six, I would have said that would have been a bad matchup. But it actually works really well, so I do like it, and I do like the fact that Mysterio. Lack of communication with his teammates is what actually takes them down. So, it's like shows that Mysterio might be too into his act and maybe not think his actions through.
Yeah. Chris, anything on the actual lineup before we get into the episode?
Oh, no. Like I said, I think it's a banger lineup. I also like the way they pair them off and you get those moments of camaraderie. Like Drew says, that moment when Sandman and the Rhino are like, hey, it's just like old times, like, oh, that's sweet. They're still friends, even though they're, you know, big superpowered criminals now. But
and Sandman can totally take down the Rhino.
Yeah. I mean, all he's gotta do is, you know, just go inside, you know, just go down his throat and suffocate him. But I digress. Mysterio being the one who, like, screws it up, I think it is another, just a great example of why we always see supervillain teams, like, never working out in the long run, because they always, you know, by nature, they tend to get in each other's way and then screw each other up, and the only time you ever really see, like, a villain team working together is, like, the Rogues, you know, from The Flash. Like, in the comics, it's like, okay, no, like, we have rules, we have bylaws, like, we're essentially a family. But the Sinister Six is notorious for always getting each other's way and screwing each other up. So it was entertaining to see that brought to life here, even with this new lineup.
So when it comes to the episode itself, though, this might be my hot take here. I thought this was possibly the best episode of the entire series, other than the ending of season one.
I mean, it's a pretty damn good episode.
But I do think there are better episodes, so I'm going to have to disagree on that. But I get
this made up for all my problems I had with season one symbiote suit versus the Sinister Six episode, which was just more of a nitpick of, like, I don't know how I feel about it, him 1v6ing the Sinister Six without him knowing he's doing it. This one just was like, nope. He's going to take them all on. We're going to see him go through the process of what I need to do to take each villain down. I love the way that they use the inner monologues of Peter to show that. This was really just an action-packed episode, too. So, what did you guys think of the episode overall?
I like the episode. It does feel like they put a little much on Peter's obliviousness, or like the fact that he's easily distractible. A little. It's like, it's not as though there isn't a precedence. It's like him looking away and then suddenly something else happening is like a huge part of it. But normally he's being distracted.
He's also 16. He's smart, but he's also a 16-year-old kid.
Yeah. But it's like the thing with Mary Jane, it's like when she's talking to her, it's not like Peter has ever gotten so distracted where he's like, oh my God, she's so gorgeous and can't listen to her everything. It's like, that was a little played up for the episode. It's like, I get it, he's 16, but he's not that starstruck by people.
I mean, hey, have you hung out with Mary Jane Watson?
No, I haven't.
All right, then. You know, that's the end of that.
I disagree, but you know what? Moving on. Again, I told you I love the Sinister Six, how the duos pair off and everything. I like that Kraven and Mysterio are the only two that don't really have that, because they really are just working together out of happenstance. And I like how also Kraven just is like, oh yeah, no, it's the law of the jungle. It's like, I'm the alpha male of this group, okay? I'm the big shot of here. And it's like, ah, Kraven, you have no idea how wrong you are. But yeah, I do love the episode, and the fact that again, every time Peter and Gwen want to, like, actually talk to each other, it's like something just keeps coming up. That old Parker luck running true to form.
Tristan, what are your thoughts on the episode itself, man?
It's at least in my top. See, it's in my top three. The other one, the blueprints I mentioned, top four. This is bumping up to top three, because any time, this is part of why I think I mentioned this way back when we were talking about, we were doing our spoiler talk for Spider-Man No Way Home. I just love seeing the Sinister Six together. So in any episode of any adaptation of Spider-Man, if the Sinister Six or some permutation of them is together, it's going to rank pretty high for old T. Breezy. And man, what a damn good Christmas holiday episode. Like, also just a quick sound, we're talking about the love triangle stuff. This is the best one, because this is the best episode for that, because you have that moment where Peter just sees MJ and he's like, man, she's so great. And you're like, yeah, she is great, Peter. That's your future wife. That's gonna be the mother of your child. That then,
well,
like,
if we
gets
ever
erased from reality.
Get a
Spider-Girl,
we'd really, yeah, really love the comics to stop.
Mayday Parker. That. That's the mother of Mayday Parker, you know? That's, yeah, that's the Spider-Man kid we need. That's the one we all want. But I digress.
Well, actually now it's like they did say it might be a son now with that other one.
Nah, I only care about Mayday Parker. That's the Spider-Man kid I want to see. But I also really like the way Peter has to think of new ways to take down the Sinister Six in this episode, like you said, Taylor, without the use of the symbiote, because you can tell, like, all of the Six, thanks likely to the Master Planner, they've, you know, figured out how it is that Peter beat him before, like, for instance, the way that
everybody got smarter, but yeah, not got ways smarter. That felt like unrealistic. I like Peter doesn't defeat everybody with just a snap of his fingers,
yeah,
and call it a day. That was an Avengers Endgame joke. It felt like a natural progression. Like Peter, okay, so they all leveled up. I gotta figure something out. He'll get hit, and then he'll slowly figure out the next step.
Exactly. Like I was saying, an example of that would be, you know, he tried to punch the vulture in the little
jetpack,
control pack or whatever. Yeah, and he's like, oh, nope, learn from that, bitch. And, you know, then he, like, he realizes, like, oh, he's defensive about that left side because of, you know, it getting yanked out before, so I can distract him with that. So it was just a lot of clever ways for Peter to figure out how to take down these villains that are all teaming up on him, you know, like throwing all those tires at Electro and melting, getting Electro to melt him down, getting Kraven to, you know, get knocked out by Mysterio's bomb. Just a lot of a great example of Peter's intelligence in this episode, and I really appreciated that.
And his ability to think on the fly.
Yeah, definitely. I think also one of the things I also enjoyed about this, before we move on, for one, this was apparently the first Christmas before, or the first Christmas after Uncle Ben died. I think that was said in this episode. So that was interesting.
Yeah. And it also, like, gives a good timeline. It's like Peter hasn't even been Spider-Man for a year, and he's already having to deal with, like, Sinister Six and all those problems.
Which is why I'm also glad that they didn't show Peter immediately figure it all out and had the plans ready, because this is a Peter that's still learning, and he wasn't too stupid and he wasn't too smart for the situation. And I really thought it was written well in this episode, and action really showcased that too. So great job in the animation, the writing, and everything in between. I thought it was great, including, I believe, there was a premature ejaculation joke in this episode, which just threw me by surprise. How they got that past censors.
Oh, but they have a few of them. It's like when Harry returns, it's like, and they do the double date, it's like he literally says, oh, then this weekend we're a foursome. And it's like, it goes over your head as a kid. It's like, wait a minute.
let's go ahead and I guess move on to our next one. Anything else you guys want to say, though, about Sinister Six?
I feel very, very sad for Rhino when Peter has him crash through the ice. And it's like, I can understand why Rhino hates you, Pete, because that was cold.
Oh, we got a Rhino moment later in the season that I fucking loved. I can't wait to get into it. But let's talk about the Master Planner, who was revealed in sheer strength to be none other than Doc Ock, Otto Octavius. How did you guys feel about this reveal? I initially, in my notes, I did not like this episode. I hated it. I did not like the Doc Ock reveal. And I think over the past few days, I've kind of done a little bit of a 180 on it. I've kind of come to be like, you know what? The more I saw Doc Ock throughout the season, the more I understood their decision and more I kind of liked it. So what did you guys think of this reveal and the episode overall?
So even when I was a kid, I did kind of expect it. I don't remember why, though. I think the biggest thing for why I expected Doc to be the Master Planner was because I did feel as though, like, if you're gonna have the Sinister Six, you gotta have Doc Ock a part of it, because I was into Spider-Man comics back then, and it's like Doc is kind of necessary for any Sinister anything. And if you don't have it, it just doesn't feel right. But when it was revealed, I was like, oh yeah, kind of makes sense that it would be him. I mean, they haven't really revealed a Spider-Man villain with that level of intelligence yet. And if you're going to keep the Master Planner a secret, it has to be someone who Peter knows. And it's like, I didn't think Norman Osborn was going to be it. So yeah, only thing I could think of. Oh yeah, and also I knew it wasn't the big man, because, like, why would he need to go by a different name?
Well, I expected Doc Ock to be the master planner because, well, in the comics, Doc Ock was the master planner. I'm pretty sure. At least in the last Spider-Man Beyond run, he was referring to himself as the Master Planner like 75 times. I think in the original Master Planner saga, it was still Doc Ock. Drew, am I correct on that?
Yeah, I do think so. I do think so. It's not one of my most well-known things of the Spider-Man comics, so I'm not entirely sure. But I also think that I do remember, because there was a female Doc Ock at the time, and he was going by Master Planner for a while, and it was all...
I meant like in the original, like, the original Stan Lee and Jack Kirby stuff, with the storyline with the iconic, like, Peter lifting, like, trapped under the rubble and, like, lifting it up in the water thing that we see in this episode. I'm pretty sure Doc Ock was also the master planner in that run as well, because that's one of his aliases. So that wasn't really a surprise. That's why when he was doing the whole, like, oh, no, don't take me, Electro, get the arms away from me, ah! I'm like, okay, well, he's just joshing, because he's the master planner. Like, he's Doc Ock. He's always got, you know, he's always thinking 10 or 8 steps. You know, he's an octopus. always thinking 8 steps ahead. But I, you know, I enjoyed this episode. I liked the callbacks to the classic storylines. I always like when I can get more Doc Ock. As I mentioned, this Doc Ock is one of my standout performances of the show. I, you know, seem to be in the little bit of the minority on this one.
At least for me, because I think for me, the reason I enjoy it more now after seeing the whole season is because I had to really accept the fact that Doc Ock isn't going to be the main overarching villain or anything like that in this show. And of course, there's only 2 seasons overall. So as soon as I accepted that and understood, like, okay, he's going to be the tier below that. He's going to be an upper card villain for Spider-Man. I'm okay with that. But for me, it was one of those things that in the reinforcement episode, we were seeing, no, don't take me back. I don't want to be with the arms. I really thought that was room for, like, depth for the character. And instead they went into, nope, he's just a bad guy. He was just fucking with people. And that's what I think just turned me off to the entire thing. I was just like, oh, okay, so he's just, all right, well, I thought we were getting something more interesting than, no, it was Doc Ock all along. But again, overall, when we got to the end of the season, like the Gangland episode, everything else, where Doc Ock takes more of a gang leader vibe, that's when I started to dig the character again.
Gangland, oh, we'll talk more about Gangland when we get to Gangland, but that's an episode.
Also, before we move on, I really like this version of Electro. He wants so much approval from Doc Ock here, and it's just interesting to me.
He definitely, like, is being, I don't want to say he's not, he's being manipulated, but it just is a great example of how cold and calculating Doc Ock can be, because for so long it seemed like he was the one being manipulated or coerced by Norman Osborn, and now he's doing the exact same thing to Electro, just with a slightly nicer demeanor to go along with it. But I think it leans into that, you know, whole master planner persona that we've seen in this season and they planted the seeds for in the last season, just with the way he's moving all the chess pieces of the other supervillains.
Yeah, also, he straight up left Electro to die instead of trying to grab him when he was escaping, so... Yeah, he's totally using Electro.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Let's move on. By the way, this was an episode where Doc Ock was getting George Stacy to basically commit treason.
And you know,
he kind of goes through with it. And amen. He kind of gets off scot-free, and I'm just like, well, damn, he dodged a bullet on that one, because nobody knew about it but Spider-Man.
Yeah, it is a huge thing, but it's like, again, I do like the fact that they do it from a place that's realistic. It's like, you do anything for your kid. It's like,
no, it's, I like, understood it, but by the end of the episode, I was just like, man, George Stacy, just because Spider-Man was the only one to know about it, he got off pretty easy there.
What's a little treason among friends, you know?
For the rest of the moment line, just may have committed a little light treason.
It's a little light treason.
But moving on here, this is one of Drew's favorite episodes he's already talked about, and that is First Steps, which is a redemption arc of sorts for Sandman. I thought this was a pretty good episode. I'm not going to have too much to say because I have a lot to say about the next few topics. I thought it was a pretty good episode. I love how Flint Marko got a little bit of a redemption arc. He's one of the characters from the Sinister Six that I thought would work with that, other than Kraven. What did you guys think? Tristan, let's start with you so Drew can cap it off.
I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I thought it was a good episode, and I enjoy Flint Marko. He's had his fair share of redemption arcs in the comics. He even was an Avenger for a little bit, so it was nothing unbelievable, but, you know, it was one of my lesser enjoyed episodes. I mean, even a mid episode of the show is still a damn good Spider-Man adaptation, so by no means did I not, you know, like it. It's not one of my favorites, but I can see why Drew would enjoy it as a fan of the Sandman.
And before we get to Drew's thoughts, one thing I do like throughout the season is they really toy around with the fact that these villains can be redeemed. We see Rhino and Spider-Man team up later on, which we'll talk about, I believe, somewhere in our topics, but I thought that was interesting to delve into. But Drew, what are your thoughts on First Steps?
I really like this episode. Okay, so I've always been a fan of the Sandman, and he's had a redemption...
Sandfan, some have called him.
Sandfan, oh, I like it. And he's had some redemption in the comics a few times, although they keep going back and forth, because some writers just want to keep him a villain, and some writers want him to be the hero that they've been redeeming him as. It goes back and forth. But I like Flint Marko's redemption arcs, because they really do show that some of these guys just were dealt a bad hand, and now that they have a good hand, they can do something with it. So, as a fan of the Sandman, really like this episode. I do like the fact that even though he has beef with Spidey, he never ever goes for the kill like Rhino does. It's like, he just wants his big score. He wants to, like, get that, what do you call it?
Trying to get that paper. He's in his bag.
Yeah, the paper. He wants that green. And Spidey's just always interfering. That's why he dislikes Spidey. And then it's like when he starts putting people's lives in danger and everything, it's like suddenly he's like, I don't want this. I just wanted my big score and everything. And he even throws Spidey to safety before containing the explosion. And then you get that nice little moment where Spidey like says, you know, Flint, you want that big score? Well, you just hit the biggest score a man can. And Sandman heard it all. And he's like smiling. And it's like, aw, that's so good.
Yeah, he's going to go rob banks in Mexico or something, though. Like, there's no way Sandman's not going to go get that paper.
But we're moving on here. We're moving on to Venom, because he is taking up an arc in this season. He is in growing pains and identity crisis. This was my favorite arc of the entire season, and Identity Crisis may have been my favorite episode of the season. I'm going to throw it to you guys. What did you think of Venom's arc, how he returned, the whole deal there? Tristan, let's start with you.
Bro, he was dogging Peter shit.
Dude, the Reverse Flash comparisons, they get even better this season.
It's just like, bro, leave this man alone for 5 minutes. Why are you at the school, bro? Why are you at your alma mater? Like, why are you doing Flash Thompson this dirty, yeeting him around with his little crutches? How you gonna do that? Like, trying to rip off this man's mask in public, trying to expose him at the Daily Beagle. Come on, pal. Come on. Like, Eddie, eventually that's gonna lead to people find out you're Venom. Do you have so little care for you? He probably doesn't give a shit about his secret identity, because he's, you know, he's Venom.
Well, they figured out of Eddie Brock, he's behind Venom. At the end of the episode, or at the end of Identity Crisis, I thought it was kind of the reveal there, but I figured out that Eddie went insane and was Venom.
Well, I mean, yeah, but did everyone really think Eddie was Venom? Because Flash was like, ah, this guy's, he's nowhere near as big enough to be Venom. Like, no one was really, I wasn't sure if that was just supposed Fair to be enough. Flash not buying it, or if that was indicative of everyone just being like, oh, he's crazy, you know?
Well, we know they were setting up Cletus Kasady, so they probably were just, like, taking him to get psychiatric help. Maybe not believing he was Venom, but maybe, like, thinking, like, he just needed help.
You beat me to it, Drew. You beat me to my theory on what I think they were going to do with Season 3. Let's go ahead and get Drew's thoughts real quick before I get into that, though. Drew, what'd you think of Venom's arc in this season?
I love Venom's arc in this season just because this is peak Venom. This is like how he was introduced, tormenting Peter, making him paranoid and everything. And also just the fact that Venom is canonically stronger than Spidey, to where Spidey is like trying to throw web balls at him and they're like, what's that? And he's like, well, they're supposed to hurt. And it's like, great idea. Wrong caliber. And it's like, he's just throwing them through buildings. Through the walls and everything, it's like, Jesus! It's like, way to make Venom feel like he is a genuine threat. Oh, and then, when it's like he gets knocked down from the stairs, in one of my favorite scenes, he uses the webs to, like, just move around through from his body alone. It's like, holy crap, that's creepy! It's like, so many great ideas. It's like, so many great scenes and everything. And then, to pull back the gene cleanser to get Eddie away from the symbiote, it's like, oh, such great uses of past plot lines and everything. And also, kind of ironic, since the gene cleanser was one of the first things Peter and Eddie and everyone at ESU worked on together.
Yeah, I'm right there with you guys. This, like I said, was my favorite arc of the season. And I love, for instance, we'll talk about Colonel Jupiter, John Jameson here later, but I love how they used him he was a pawn in this game that Venom was playing, and it caused a good person to kind of get manipulated and turned into a villain. I thought that was really cool. It shows like how manipulative Venom could be. I said this in the last episode, in the season one episode, I said like the 90s show made Venom cool. This show makes Venom terrifying because he can actually fuck shit up for real. And you see that in Identity Crisis where he causes this big, is Peter Parker Spider-Man? And you have the interviews throughout the season. I love how much people just scoff at the notion that Peter's Spider-Man too. I thought that was great. But it's like you said, Tristan, just the pettiness of Venom just
so petty. Oozes. He's just a menace.
Episodes, it's so good. And I do think my prediction, my theory on where they were going to go with this character is he was going to get put in a cell or in the same facility as Cletus Kasady. And we're going to get the symbiote somehow returned to Edom. To Eddie.
Edom!
And I was going to somehow also latch on to Cletus. And we're going to have to get a Venom Spider-Man team up to take down Carnage. That's what I thought that they were going to end up doing if they had gotten a third season, but I didn't do any research on what a season 3 would have been. The only thing I know is what you guys have told me, which the only thing that pops up in my head is that Flash Thompson would have joined the friend group and learned Peter's identity, which is weird. But yeah, just fantastic episodes all around. Anything else about Venom's story? Now I'm doing it. Thanks, Tristan.
Venom. You're welcome. You're welcome.
So after Eddie is taken away and the Venom storyline is done, there is one character who just, he's not buying that Peter Parker isn't Spider-Man, and that's George Stacy. George Stacy kind of throughout the rest of the season, he's just, yeah, dude, I know you're Spider-Man, Peter. Come on, man. Like, why are you not picking up what I'm putting down? All right. What did you guys think of George Stacy in this season?
It's going to be real sad when he dies.
Tristan,
it's going to be real sad when some rubble falls on him.
And Gwen gets pushed off of...
The Stacy family just needs to stay far away from Peter Parker, you know? That's the takeaway here. But, that being said... George Stacy, great this season, all the little nods where he's like, oh yeah, you know, I tell the kids in my class it's important to have someone watching their back. You're like, oh, okay, I see you, Clancy Brown. I see you, you know, reaching out to this young spiderling. You know what's up. But yeah, it's going to be real sad when he dies. That's what I have to say.
I would have loved to see where this went. It's like, would Peter be working with him? Because technically George Stacy is the original Yuri from the comics, where Yuri was a police officer and then technically turned into a supervillain or anti-hero, whichever way you see her. So, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I really like this character. I kind of got the impression of where I thought it was going to go, which was going to be Peter trying to also get with Gwen in season 3, and George kind of putting a stop to it and being like, look, dude, I know you're Spider-Man, kind of a little bit like the Amazing Spider-Man, what they ended up doing there. It's like, I know you're Spider-Man, don't get involved with my daughter, leave her the fuck out of this. And I can kind of see that happening in this show too. They'll tie it all back. But we never got it. That's unfortunate. But you know what we did get? Which is also unfortunate. Fucking nerfed the Tombstone. What the hell happened to this character? He was a big deal in season 1. And throughout the entire season, I went, where the fuck is Tombstone at? He comes back and he gets beat. The end. What'd you guys think of Tombstone?
That is one of the things I was disappointed in, because again, Tombstone was a heavy, heavy hitter in season 1. Not just physical wise, but he like had control. That was the thing. He had control. He had respect. And for that to be taken away, that's just like, ugh. And for it to be Hammerhead, I'm like, Hammerhead, really? It's like, you respected this guy. It wasn't just fear for you. You had respect.
It's cool though. It was cool. I was like, oh man, I'm a sucker for, I don't normally like mob stories and whatnot, but when it's a comic book mob story and it's like, oh, all these comic book villains are screwing each other over, I was like, all right, Hammerhead, what move are you making? And then it leads to this three-way fight between Tombstone and Doc Ock and Silvermane. I'm like, all right, this is cool as shit. This is probably my favorite episode of the season, actually.
Which was Gangland, correct? I believe.
Yeah, it's a banger of an episode. Like, even just the music and the way they have the operatic score playing while these three powerhouses are just throwing each other down. I'm like, yo, this is a fucking banger, bro. This is cinema. There's nothing like it.
They do set it up pretty well, Hammerhead's turn and why he does it, which I thought was, you know, pretty good. I love how it's set up with Silver Sable as well earlier in the season. I'm glad we got some, I don't want to say depth with Silver Sable and Hammerhead, but a little more than what we had before, which Silver Sable wasn't in the show. Hammerhead was just the underling to Tombstone. So I thought that was really good, the lead up to Gangland here. Drew, what are your thoughts?
I do like this. Like, again, the episode is just peak. Tristan already talked about how great they use the operatic music and everything. And I do like Jameson also being a part of this, where he's trying to be a good man to his wife. But did like it. Silver Sable does kind of come out of nowhere. I think he's the only character that is introduced and never had any prior setup for what is supposed to be a very important character. And considering his suit, I would believe that you would want someone, like, you would want someone mentioning that, because Silver Sable got some tech. Still pretty cool. Love how Tombstone has to switch sides in between there. And he has to, like, show, like, he's a good Samaritan to the people and everything. It's like, oh, cool. It's like Tombstone and Spider-Man get to team up again. It's kind of situational, but hey. And then Peter finally gets his payback on Tombstone. Gets to, like, finally take him down, now that he's more experienced and everything. It's really cool. I like it.
Yeah, I agree. 100%. The only thing I don't like about the episode is the ending where Tombstone gets taken down in one episode, where he kind of felt like an absentee villain for the entirety of season 2. And for him to be this overarching kingpin-level character in season 1, I was like, all right, what's the payoff? It felt like I got the payoff, which was great. It was cool to see Spider-Man actually defeat Tombstone after defeating both Doc Ock and Silvermane. But it just felt a little unearned because Tombstone was nowhere to be fucking found the entire season. All right, let's go ahead and move on, though, to some other villains we didn't get really talk about. Some rapid-fire villain thoughts. Because we gotta get into the final arc of this season and get the hell out of here. So, let me know what you guys think of the following characters. Miles Warren, we already talked about Miles Warren, but if you have any further thoughts on it, here's the place for it. Colonel Jupiter, Silver Sable, Hammerhead, Silvermane, and Molten Man. Tristan, let's start with you.
Colonel Jupiter, I was like, okay, well, they're not turning John Jameson into a werewolf, so that's kind of disappointing, but he's still entertaining. Silver Sable, I mean, she's great. She's Silver Sable. She's great in everything. She's a underrated Spider-Man character, and I really wish we would get her in the movies. Hammerhead was great. I like I mentioned, I enjoyed his machinations and his manipulations and power moves. Silvermane, enjoyable, but kind of one note. I'm disappointed we don't get to see him just as a single disembodied head on a robot body. But you know, maybe when we eventually get that mythical season 3 after we campaign on the internet for it for long enough. And the Molten Man, I thought they did a good job teasing Mark throughout the season, and that payoff of him finally becoming the Molten Man, I thought it was pretty satisfying.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought the Molten Man episode was really good. We didn't really talk about this, but there's an episode where George Stacy asks Spider-Man to go into prison and attempt to break out, which is, I guess, the start of the Green Goblin arc, really. But I thought that was a really good episode. You see Molten Man there. You see Silvermane, who I thought was pretty good. Same thing with Hammerhead and Silver Sable. Colonel Jupiter, again, I talked about, like, he's really just a byproduct of what happened to him with the symbiote and what happened with Venom and his manipulation there and how petty he is that he will just destroy people's lives just to get at Peter. So I thought that was very interesting of a character choice for, I didn't know that John Jameson was a villain. I just thought for real he was an astronaut. I didn't know he turned into a werewolf or anything.
So he's not technically a villain. Technically, in the comics, he's sort of just been all over the place. It's like, he sometimes turns into a werewolf, and sometimes he's a good guy. Sometimes he loses control, and he's more of a space werewolf, if we're being honest. It's a whole thing.
He also dates She-Hulk.
Oh yeah, he and She-Hulk were a thing for a while, and honestly, I nearly forgot about that, if I'm going to be honest, because She-Hulk's had so many different boyfriends or just one-night stands that it's like, kind of, it's like, you just get lost with the less interesting ones.
But Drew, what are your thoughts on some of these other villains here so we can wrap up and talk about the final arc of the entire series?
I like how they make John kind of like Peter. He likes to joke in front of his trauma and stuff, or like anything that's bad's going on. He also has a great relationship with JJ, but obviously it's not as beneficial as Uncle Ben was to Peter. In a way, it's like John is kind of like a reflection of how bad Peter could have ended up if he had a, not even a bad role model, just not someone who was kind of like a paragon like Uncle Ben. Who else? Oh, Molten Man. That was the saddest supervillain origin I have ever seen. Well, not I've ever seen, but it was like one of the saddest I've seen. It's like, just have this kid who, like, he's trying to get out. He's trying not to be like the super bad guy or everything. Gotta finish his debts or else it's gonna come back and bite the people he cares about and everything. And he's even shown to be a good brother to Liz. It's like, hey, Peter, haven't been like a good boyfriend to my sister and everything, and she deserves better than that. Great setup, and then it all goes to crap for him. And kudos of showing how the Green Goblin loves to manipulate and torment people if he gets what he wants and everything. It is part of his Norman personality too, because he did that to Doc. Wow, it's like, We talk about how Eddie's willing to ruin someone's life and everything, but Norman just loves to hold your life in the palm of his hand and do what he wants with it. And opening night, That is probably my favorite episode of Spectacular Spider-Man. Testing the vault security system and having an episode that would have been fine on its own, and then elevating it by Peter having to confront the man who killed Uncle Ben.
Who's also Black Cat's father, which I thought was a...
It was an interesting twist.
Yeah, it was a very interesting twist that wasn't necessary, but I appreciated it.
And it switches up their dynamics, and it does it really well of allowing their stories to flow and everything, and just her now blaming Spider-Man that her father's gonna rot in prison, even though it was his choice. So it's so good. Opening night just does so much good stuff. I love it.
It also showed Peter, and I think this is interesting because this is something that we all kind of do as well, is whenever something happens to us, it becomes more personal and we take it more offensively. And you see Peter, and he's very joking and everything, and he believes that some of these people he's going after are killers. They're not good people, and he's like, they can still have a second chance. The guy who killed Uncle Ben, he doesn't deserve a second chance. He deserves to be locked up in there, which is his own decision. Like, he doesn't have to forgive that man, of course, but I find that intriguing. That especially in this episode, he goes from joking around to he sees the man who killed his uncle, and he becomes a fucking, I don't want to say a prick, but he just becomes that dickish Spider-Man.
I mean, he shuts down. He's like, nope,
dismissive, I guess is the best way to put it, which, again, understandable, but I just find it intriguing how that switch just gets flipped for him. When if it was any other villain who committed a murder and like, oh, they deserve a second chance, he wouldn't look the other way. But the second chance thing, he'd probably believe in. Let's finish up our retrospective with the final arc of this entire series, which spans from Gangland to Subtext to Opening Night, and really, really goes off with a bang with the final curtain. And that is the Green Goblin arc here. I'm going to go ahead and get my full thoughts out there. I'm just going to let you guys go nuts with it afterwards. So I really like this arc. I told you guys in the last episode, I thought Norman was going to end up being the Green Goblin, but I thought it was going to be a different way to do it. I thought he was just going to manipulate Harry and be like, oh, it must be Harry again, and no, it's Norman. I had no idea this twist was coming. I was freaking floored by it. I thought it was awesome. Putting Chameleon into the twist too, fucking great. I just didn't expect it, especially after setting him up in season one and not doing anything with Chameleon in season two. That felt very intentional, especially when you finish this season, and I loved it for it. The Green Goblin is so damn good. Again, Venom barely edges him out for me, but it's very close. I love this character, and I love this arc. What did you guys think?
I am on the same track as you, where I expected Norman to be the Green Goblin, because like I remembered from years ago, even though I couldn't hear anything aside from the goblin screams with the bombs, like, all right, pretty sure Norman's the Green Goblin, pretty sure that's how this wraps up, but I couldn't quite get into the specifics. I was surprised by the Chameleon twist, which then I felt dumb. I was like, damn, I'm the comic guy, why am I surprised that it's the Chameleon? Like, I should have seen that coming.
My dumbass seriously was thinking, is it going to be the mom? Are they right? Really going to pull this twist?
It's like, is Tombstone the Green Goblin? but no, Harry, yeah, for a moment, like, no, there. Right. Yeah, when he said, oh, is it mom? I was like, wait, shit. Is his mom the Green Goblin? I don't remember that part.
It's like, she's the silent one. She's hurt. She's at nearly every conversation. Right? But we never were there. It's like,
shit. It's like, shit, is the reason she's silent all season because she's really voiced by Steve Blum, yeah, and that would have been a giveaway?
One last red herring. So good. But you guys were saying?
Yeah, no. I really liked how they showed how manipulative and cold Norman can be in these few episodes, because before it's just like, oh, a creepy mentor. But with this, it's like, no, like, Norman is essentially, like, Norman's an abusive father. And they don't go full tilt with it like they do in the comics, but they go far enough on this kid show where you're like, okay, yeah, no, like, he's a bad dad. Like, he snaps his own kid's leg, you know, to throw off suspicion that he's the goblin. It's just like, man, what a conniving, cold-hearted son of a bitch. And, you know, you think he's dead, which you know he's not really, because Green Goblin's not dead until you see him get stabbed in the chest with his own glider, and even then, it's 50-50.
Then he has to say, don't tell Harry, and it's like,
don't
deal.
Tell Harry. Well, in that version, that's when he gets stabbed in the dick. So, you know, comics that's got stabbed in the chest. I mean, am I wrong? He got stabbed right in that pelvis.
No, he did. I'm the one who brought it up in our episode. Oh, you weren't on that episode.
What a way, what a sad way to go. You know,
I think
right,
it was me
right,
and man. Riley on that episode. Yeah, he got stabbed directly in the dick.
Just nailed.
One of the worst ways to go.
One of the worst, 100% one of the worst ways to go. Haunting stuff, haunting stuff. Almost as haunting as the hundreds of screams slash laughs at the pumpkin bombs that blew him up made in this episode. But yeah, no, I think it's one of my favorite overall arcs of the series, just because it's finally getting to that point of like, yeah, it's Norman, it's the Green Goblin, like it's that classic Peter Parker and Norman Osborn rivalry that we all know and love from the comics, and I'm super jacked to see it in this interpretation. And you know, I like the red herrings. I like the teasing. Oh, is it Harry? Is it someone else? It almost gives like Hobgoblin vibes from the original comics. You're like, wait, who is the Hobgoblin? Who's the real person? Who could it be? But yeah, no, I really enjoy this arc. And even though this series leaves us with cliffhangers that never get resolved, I still think that it's a pretty solid way to wrap up the show.
Yeah. So everything Tristan said, 100% agree with, and it really does fit Norman's personality, though, because it's like throughout the entire T of the two seasons, we see that Norman does not apologize. He does not feel regret for his actions. He is a tried and true psychopath. But more than that, he is a psychopath who is willing to go to any means to get what he wants. And the reveal when I was younger that it was him, I was just dead speechless when I found out. It was so well done, so well crafted.
But overall, yeah, I agree with both of you. Great arc, great ending for this series. I think even with it not getting a complete wrap up in a tight little bow and you send it off with everything answered, I still think as a Spider-Man fan, you could finish this show and kind of put in your head, like, you know, I'm fine with that. I've seen enough Spider-Man stories to know where this would go, at least the main arcs, and kind of see where the characters would go, to where you're not left so open-ended about it. But let's get out of here. Let's talk about our final thoughts and our final pros and cons. Tristan, what are your final pros and cons and your final thoughts for Spectacular Spider-Man Season 2?
Final pro, pretty much everything about it. Final con, the fact that it got canceled. That's it, honestly. Like,
yeah,
it's a good show.
Yeah, gotta go with Tristan, everything. It was taking us too soon. Can't believe we got a garbage sequel. And I get that some people like it, but it's garbage. I'm sorry.
I don't get it.
And you're talking about
show.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
We're talking about Ultimate Spider-Man. It's a bad show.
Yeah, and it's like, listen, I like some bad shows. I can still admit they're bad shows. Just admit something is a bad show and then move on.
Well, I am going to echo a lot of the sentiments you guys do, but I'm going to have a few more cons. Pros, pretty much everything. The action got a little better, I think. I think the comedy got a little bit better. Josh Keaton really settled into Peter Parker in this season, I think, especially. There's a lot of just great stuff here. Great villains, great Sinister Six episode. One of my favorite episodes of the entire series, alongside the conclusion, I guess, to the Venom storyline. And, of course, the conclusion, I guess, to the Green Goblin storyline, which just all bangers. As for cons, just like you guys said, I can't believe this thing got canceled. And it was apparently a casualty of the whole Disney, Sony, Marvel, Spider-Man scuffle. So that sucks. But I also have a few more cons for this season, too, which are really, I just didn't care for the Doc Ock reveal as the Master Planner. And overall, just, I didn't like Tombstone's nerf. I thought that they set him up so well in season 1 for him in season 2 just to have like a 1 episode and then we're done. It just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I was just like, ah, all right, well, thought you were going to do more with that. But we got a lot of great stuff here. And honestly, this might just be the best Spider-Man show I've seen. After seeing all of it. So glad I watched it. I'm glad Drew put this on our sacred wheel that we spin at the end of every month to see what topics we cover. And let's go ahead and get out of here. Tristan, what you working on? Where can people find you?
Well, you can still find my writing over at Screen Rant. I've been popping out some bangers lately. You want to hear about what DC animated hero Black Adam's particularly vulnerable to? Why don't you go on over to Screen Rant and see what I have to say about it. You can find me on all the socials. That's TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram at BackIssueBens.
Hey, Tristan. Did you know that Black Adam is going to change the hierarchy of the DC?
Bro, let me tell you something. If there's one thing I know about Black Adam, is that he's going to change a lot of things. Top of the list of things to change, the hierarchy of power in the DC.
It's going to be that hierarchy of power.
The DC universe will never be the same.
It will never be the same. What does that mean? Probably just a random post-credit scene.
Who's to say?
Non-specific Superman. Probably just like Shazam.
Just Superman from the neck down. I'm going to end it all.
It's like, oh, maybe
reboot at this point. I don't give a fuck anymore. Like, whatever.
It's like we keep giving hope to the DCEU, and then
I'm so out of hope at this point. It's just let me know when I get a Superman movie or the Batman 2. Those are about the only things I'm really caring about right now.
True, I care about what you're working on. So why don't you let everybody else know what you're working on and where can people find you?
I am at Fanfic World on my YouTube channel, or you can get in contact with me through my Twitter or Instagram, DrewGarrison_. The next video, I am making my own fake Pokemon, because apparently Scarlet and Violet are supposed to be good jumping on points for people who haven't played in a while, so I will be trying to jump back into Pokemon. It's been a while, so hopefully I don't make a Pokemon that's like a carbon copy of something, so since it's been like, what is it, 3 different iterations of Pokemon that I haven't been a part of? I don't know, it's going to be a lot, but hopefully you guys like my fake Mon.
All right, so if you like what you heard here today, you can join our Discord. The link for that is in the description of this episode, and you can talk with us about Spectacular Spider-Man. Also, consider leaving us a rating. It would also be awesome if it was a positive one. And finally, be sure to check out thenerdstash.com. By the time this episode goes out, there is hopefully a redesign for thenerdstash.com that had recently went live. And I actually saw a sneak preview of this redesign, and I really fucking love it. So be sure to check out thenerdstash.com. You can find all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, comics, and so much more. We got reviews, opinion pieces, lists, guides, you name it. I want to thank Tristan for joining me. I want to thank Drew for joining me. I want to thank anyone for listening in. We greatly appreciate it. We've spent the last few episodes on some awesome movies and a spectacular TV show. And pun intended on that one. But I think we're due for some fun with a bad movie. So next week, we'll be back with a retrospective on Daredevil. Not the outstanding TV show. We're doing a retrospective on the 2003 film starring Ben Affleck
as
the Man Without Fear.
Drew, we're watching the director's cut, remember? Let's ignore what Taylor says. We're watching the director's cut.
Yep.
It should be a good time, though. We'll see you then.